Evam karari shravanari chakshu Jivari nasari cha chitta yuktam Evam karari shravanari chakshu Jivari nasari cha chitta yuktam Evam, in the same way, takari, the skin, the sensation of touch, and the demigod of the wind, vayu. Shravanari, the ears, the sensation of sound, and the demigods of the directions. Chakshu, the eyes, described in the previous verse. Jivadi, the tongue, the sensation of taste, and the god of water, Varuna. Nasahari, the nose, the sensation of smell, and the Ashvini Kumaras. Cha, also. Chitta Yuktam, along with consciousness, implying not only conditioned consciousness, together with the object of that consciousness and the presiding deity Vasudev, together with the object of that consciousness and the presiding deity Vasudev, but also the mind, together with the object of thought. And the moon god, Chandra, intelligence, with the object of intelligence, and Lord Brahma, and false ego, together with identification of false ego, and Lord Rudra. Translation. Similarly, the sense organs, namely the skin, ears, eyes, tongue, and nose, as well as the functions of the subtle body, namely conditioned consciousness, mind, intelligence, and false ego, can all be analyzed in terms of the threefold distinction of sense, object of perception, and presiding deity. Purport. The individual soul has no permanent relationship with the interdependent material functions of the senses, sense objects, and controlling deities. The living entity is originally pure spirit soul and is meant to depend on the personality of Godhead in the spiritual world. It is useless to try to analyze matter and spirit within the same categories, since they belong to different potencies of the Supreme Lord. Thus, the act of spiritually perceiving the Supreme Lord, his abode, and one's own self is an entirely anti-material process realized within pure Krishna consciousness. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. How have we become so embedded in such an artificial network? Just like a fish caught in the fisherman's net. At least the fish has some understanding that it's caught. Because the more it struggles, the more it's entangled in the net. But as conditioned souls in material existence, we seem to lack knowledge that we're caught, that we're entangled, and that our struggles will not solve the problem. Why is it that we cannot perceive our own entanglement? This is the power of illusory energy. Deep in the subconsciousness, everyone has experienced utter defeat in material existence, in one body or another, on one planet or another. That is in the back of everyone's mind. What's the proof that this defeat is in the back of everyone's mind? Fear. Fear is an essential part of material existence. Oh, what problems will tomorrow bring? What will the economy be like tomorrow? What will my job be like tomorrow? What will my husband or wife be like tomorrow? What will my children be like tomorrow? On and on and on it goes. Why? Because of fear. If you want to escape fear, then you have to escape material existence. We've spoken before how part of the Western solution, now become universal, part of that solution for fear is to heavily immerse yourself in intoxication. And of course, then you simply lose any trace of intelligence that you possess. Intelligence that's meant for making an ultimate solution to life's problems. You descend into the mode of ignorance in which you can't even distinguish what is proper, what is improper. You become so dull. What is the most intelligent way to deal with fear? That begins by understanding fear is part and parcel of material existence. It's intelligent to fear material existence. So much so that you don't want to have anything to do with it. Just like if you walk down a dangerous street at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're intelligent to be fearful. But you should be even more intelligent and not go on that street at 2 o'clock in the morning. So similarly, if we are so smart, if we are so great, why are we here in the material world? Just by our presence in material existence, it can be seen that we are not so bright. We're not the smartest persons in the room. The smartest persons in the room, actually, they're not in the room. The fact that we've come to material existence, this room known as Trigunamayi, the environment dominated by the, saturated by the three modes of material nature, the fact that we've come here means we have lost our intelligence. So material existence is an ongoing process of becoming more and more bewildered. And how does that increased bewilderment happen? The more we act fruitively, the more we act karmically, the more bewildered we become, the more entangled in the network of karma we become. Where did it all begin? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Anadi Karma Phale Bhavi Bhavarnava Jale. You can't trace out materially the beginning of your implication in material existence. To be implicated in something is a very uncomfortable feeling. That you were walking along on the street and someone committed a crime, and then the police shut off the whole street and they grab everyone and take them to the police station for questioning. Say, wait a minute, I was just walking along doing some shopping, and now there was some crime, some terrorist attack or something, and they closed off the street and scooped everyone up. It's a very, very embarrassing feeling to be implicated. But that is a daily event in material existence. Why daily event? What about hourly? Every moment, every second, we're becoming more and more implicated. Implicated means being entangled. So how are we at fault? We're just, as we see ourselves, just innocently making our way through material existence, right? Trying to be nice people, trying to make a bit of money, trying to provide a bit of security for the future. How is it that there's something wrong with that. We see this innocence because it's a dream. We have dreamed our innocence. Actually, just by our presence in material nature, it shows we are guilty just because we showed up. Just because we're here, that means guilty. Real knowledge begins with understanding that there is nothing innocent about material activity. There's nothing innocent about being present in material existence. Integrity and fine character means you are making an exit strategy. That is the sign of intelligence and integrity. As long as we think that the symptom of intelligence is to try to expertly struggle in material existence, the more deluded we become. This is a false standard of intelligence. Let us linger very nicely. Let us loiter very nicely. Let us be nice people loitering in material existence. Doing the best we can, trying to make money, trying to have security, well, then leave it at that. Be nice to your neighbor. Of course, the neighbors are always changing these days. People don't even know their neighbors anymore. But still in their mind, they think, I'm nice to my neighbor. Who is he? Who is she anyway? If their house caught on fire, I would call the fire department. That's known as being very personal these days. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam gives us a different standard of what is innocence and what is guilt. And we learn, through the eyes of Bhagavatam, the process of entanglement. It's nothing innocent about it. By the processes of bhakti, we lose our desire to act fruitively. This is the monster that we're wrestling with, the desire to act for our own material benefit. It seems so clear and obvious, doesn't it, in this world? You want to be happy, so act for your own happiness. You want to be happy, so act for the happiness of your friends and loved ones. What's wrong with that? How could you be guilty of any crime? But the first thing that a bhakti yogi learns is that there's nothing innocent about karmic activity. Why can the bhakti yogi take that position? Because bhakti yoga offers something else radically different from karmic activity. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is the first one to admit, you have to act. Nahi kaschanamapi jatu tishchat yakarmakrit. Everyone has to act. No one can stop acting. You act according to how you're being impelled by Trigunabhai, by the modes of material nature. Your body and mind, everything about you materially is composed of the three modes. So you have a particular flavor that characterizes your material identity. And according to that particular flavor of your material identity, you act. You have to act. So we're not doomed to simply to perform material activity. There is a completely different set of activities that the spiritual world gives to us. Spiritual sense objects to revive your spiritual senses. And the spiritual sense objects, that is Krishna's territory. You've heard in this chapter of Bhagavatam how material life means senses, sense objects, and and something we don't realize. I mean, it's really rare these days that people can think so clearly about their life to understand. I have senses. The senses are pursuing sense objects. How many of you thought like that before coming in contact with bhakti? You actually were able to analyze your life? Okay, I have senses, eyes, ears, tongue, sense of touch, so on and so forth. And with these senses, I am trying to pursue sense objects and interact with those sense objects. How many of you sat down and just mapped out your whole existence like that? No. Yet, we thought we were so intelligent and so expert. Oh, I have a PhD. I have such a high job. Look, in my house, all the conveniences are there. I must be intelligent. This is how we deluded ourselves. We didn't even understand the basics, that the material body is a bag of senses. Indriyani. What's the rest? Huh? Indriyani. Pranayama. Yes. Material body means a bag of senses. And with those senses, you pursue sense objects. Then there's an even further level of ignorance. Simply understanding that there are senses and sense objects, that's not enough. There's a third factor, and this chapter is highlighting that third factor. Every sense, in its pursuit of the sense objects, operates under the control of a presiding deity. In other words, we're not independent in our material sense gratification. Isn't that a great blow to our ego? We are not independent in the sacred, private activity of pursuing the sense objects. Now just think of the blanket of ignorance, unfortunately, that people operate under. They think, alright, I want such and such a sense object. They don't think sense object. They just think, I want this thing, that person, this situation, that situation. They never think that this process of material interaction between the senses and the sense objects is controlled. The whole material experience is controlled by a particular deva, demigod. This is the matrix. The matrix includes the senses, the sense objects, and the presiding deity of those senses. So where is our independence? Yet the amazing thing is, the genuine self, the spirit soul, has no relationship with this matrix, with this network. We're fish unnecessarily struggling in a net. We don't have to be embedded in that net. But what causes us to perpetuate our foolishness? Attachment to struggling in the net. People even say, if you're not going to struggle, what are you going to do? If you're not going to face the challenges of trying to be happy in this world, then what is there for you to do? And sometimes people, they criticize the bhakti yogis. You're not dealing with the challenges of material life. You're running away from them. You're trying to escape the blazing fire of material existence. You should stay in the fire and struggle. That's the mark of high human civilization. Family, friends, society, they encourage you, just stay in the blaze. Don't jump out. Show your prowess somehow. Within the blaze, be a star. Be famous. A sports star, a famous business person, movie actress. Or just in your own way, be successful at getting sense gratification. However you want it, however you see it. Who is encouraging us to get out of the blazing fire of material existence? That is the first sign of intelligence. So once again, please think of this network of illusion. And we take it so seriously. Of course, the bhakti yogi is expert in dealing with the material world. It's not that the bhakti yogi doesn't observe the world. He or she definitely sees the material world, but understands it for what it is. Just like you see someone else having a dream. You understand the person's dreaming. At night, you yourself can dream so many things. And in fact, while you're dreaming, you may know that you're dreaming. Any of you had that experience? That while you're dreaming, you know you're dreaming. It's not that you have to wake up and, oh, it was all a dream. You can, while you're dreaming, recognize that you're dreaming. In the same way, the bhakti yogi sees the material world. It's not that we hide from the material world, but we see it clearly for what it is. It's a dream. And what about the senses pursuing the sense objects? In the 11th canto, elsewhere, it's explained that just like someone takes a burning stick, a stick that at the tip is glowing red hot from fire, and you whirl the stick around, you'll see like a circle, a red circle. But who takes that to be reality, that red circle you see? As soon as you slow down the whirling of the stick, that red circle disappears. But when you're spinning the stick very fast, you see a red circle caused by the glowing red tip of the stick. So the bhakti yogi is expert at just slowing down the world and seeing clearly what's going on. Bhakti yoga is for the most intelligent person. It's the topmost engineering, the topmost art, the topmost culture. A question was asked elsewhere in this 11th canto. Uddhava asked this question. The Kumaras asked this question. How can enlightenment, how can spiritual perfection be possible when you have such an intimate relationship between the senses and the sense objects, particularly between the mind and the sense objects? What's going on in material existence? Let's be analytical. In a practical way, we should not be afraid of analysis. We should learn how to think clearly and see what's going on. The mind is attracted to the sense objects. And it's a two-way street. The sense objects are lodging themselves in your mind because of desire. So it's a reciprocal relationship going on all the time. The mind running towards the sense objects. The sense objects lodging themselves, burying themselves in your mind. So the question asked by Uddhava and others is, how then can spiritual advancement be possible when you've got this intense, flowing, dynamic relationship happening all the time between the mind and the sense objects? Who can break that up? What else are you going to do if you don't participate in that loop, endless loop of the mind pursuing the sense objects and the sense objects lodging themselves in the mind? Krishna gives a very profound understanding of the situation, because otherwise we'll feel helpless. And sometimes even devotees say like that, oh, my mind, when will it ever stop running toward the sense objects? When will the sense objects stop lodging themselves in my mind? Oh, it just goes on and on all the time. Sometimes devotees admit it, sometimes they don't. So, how does Krishna explain what's happening? He says, The first mistake, and it's not an innocent mistake, the first mistake is to identify the body, the mind, and the material intelligence as the self. Once you do that, what happens? You may think it's just an innocent thing. All right, sometimes I think I'm the body. Everyone thinks they're the body. Just be nice, be well-mannered, be courteous. Now, as soon as you identify with the body, the mind, and the material intelligence as the self, then you leave the door. The front door is wide open for the mode of passion, Rajagun, to flood into your life. And what is the outcome of the mode of passion flooding through that door that you left wide open because you identified with the body, the mind, the material intelligence? When that Rajagun, the mode of passion, floods into your life through that open door, you become absorbed in what? Making and changing plans for material enjoyment. Can you see? That's what material life's all about. I'll try this. I'll try that. Ooh, this looks good. Oh, really? Thanks for that information. I'll try it myself. Oh, that's what happiness is? Oh, now I understand. It's amazing what I've seen on television and what I've seen on the internet. That's what it's all about. Okay, thank you. I'll go for it. Oh, my friends are all telling me like this. So you're constantly making and changing plans. You make one plan. Oh, it didn't work. Try another thing. Okay, I'll try another thing. I'll try another way. I'm no fool. I've been around for a few years. I understand life. But material existence makes a fool out of everyone. Are we humble enough to admit that? No one likes to be called a fool. We like to present ourselves as, I know what I'm doing. My friends tell me I know what I'm doing. That's why they're my friends. How many of you would like to have a friend who told you that you didn't know what you're doing? You would drop the person. Even sometimes amongst our devotees, if someone tries to give some superior advice, Prabhu, it doesn't look like you know what you're doing. He's puffed up. She's puffed up. This is our problem. No one likes to feel that you don't know what you're doing. You want to feel competent. But a devotee who wants to advance always thinks, I don't know what I'm doing. It's only Krishna. It's only Guru and Krishna's mercy, the mercy of the Vaishnavas, that I can sort out my life and see a way forward. We've spoken before how Krishna in Bhagavad Gita points out the effects of thinking we are so competent. Mudha janmani janmani. Krishna says, birth after birth, you'll be a fool. Birth after birth. So we're not just dealing with one lifetime of being a fool. Birth after birth. This is the curriculum, the course, the university that we're enrolling in. It's embarrassing, isn't it? So then, Uddhava asks Krishna an interesting question. He says, generally, the conditioned soul knows that material activities are futile, are pointless, but still he or she engages in material activities anyway. Why is this? Now you might say, well, I don't know that everyone thinks material activities are futile. So many people see possible success. You can remember you yourself seeing, yeah, I think that looks good. I think it'll work out. I think it's nice. I think my life will be better if I do like this and do like that. So you didn't see it all as futile. But Uddhava is going deeper. Behind your false sense of competence is fear. You know it's not going to work in the back of your mind. You know you can lose it all at any moment. That means you really know it's futile. because you've experienced being crushed in so many lifetimes, in so many different bodies, on so many different planets. So, externally, you may act very confident. I know what I'm doing. I've got a real good job. I've really figured out the most intelligent mortgage plan for my home. I know exactly what my family is going to be doing 20 years from now. I've got the wife's future all figured out. I know exactly what my children will be doing. Or the wife thinks, I know exactly what my husband should do. You think you have it all figured out based on competence, but underneath it all, there's fear. And that fear means that somehow or other you recognize the futility of material existence. You're fearful. When will the reality of material existence show up and spoil everything? And then you lament and cry and groan and oh, and you present yourself as being innocent. Here's the mantra. All I wanted was just such and such. That's all. This is how we present ourselves as being innocent. I just wanted this and that. Is that a crime? I didn't want much. All I wanted was such and such. That's all. And this is what happened to me in the world. Job security failed. Romance fails. Health fails. But, okay. Even you say, I know someone who had a good job and a nice family all their life. But then what? Death cheats everyone. So much so, as we pointed out several times, for example, one of my godbrothers, his parents were married for 70 years. Can you believe it? 70 years of marriage. But what happens when the father died, when his father died? His mother died soon after because she couldn't live in separation. There's a medical term for what happens, that the person loses the will to thrive, loses the will to just carry on with life. So again, failure, futility. So much so you don't want to go on with life. The illusion is that we think, if I just get this or that, I'll be happy. It never works that way. So remember Krishna's process that he describes, the 11th canto. First, you identify with the body and mind, material intelligence. And then that identification, that mistake of identification, leaves the door wide open in your life for the mode of passion, rajagun, to flood in. And you become falsely empowered. Yes, I shall struggle in the material world. Yes, I shall endeavor. Yes, I shall achieve. I'm going to go for it. That's this mode of passion surging through your life. Yes. And people around you tell you, you're good, you're good, you're competent. Go for it. Right? You even do to each other like that. That's a mode of passion. And the whole society encourages this rajagun, mode of passion. Employers encourage it. Yes, we want to see that you have a drive to get ahead. Potential marriage partners, they want to see that. I want to see that you have a lust for life. They say like that. Yes, it's coming to India soon, don't worry. The latest horror movie from the West. Soon when it's time for the arranged marriage, when the parents, say, why not this one, that one? You know, they'll ask that question, do you have a lust for life? This is the mode of passion. And when the mode of passion floods your life, as we explained, you are busy making and changing plans for material happiness. There always must be change because the plan, the original plan, never gives you what you want. But we're so foolish we can't see that. We try to hide from that reality. And because, Krishna explains, the mode of passion predominates your life, that means suffering predominates your life. Because the mode of passion means suffering. And in this way, life becomes a pointless struggle. Because whatever you're pursuing, you're going to lose. What to do? What's the positive solution? That is given in the Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. You have to jump above this whole network of senses, sense objects, and presiding deity of the senses. You have to jump above this whole loop of the mind running towards the sense objects, and the sense objects lodging themselves in the mind. Jump above that loop by focusing on what gives Krishna pleasure. Then you are no longer performing karmic activity. You're out of that loop. You're out of the trap. You're out of the network. Even though you're active. This is the great mystery of bhakti. You're super active. In fact, more active in bhakti than you were in material affairs. But you're outside the loop of karmic activity by focusing on Krishna. Focusing upon Krishna, thinking about Krishna, means thinking about what gives Krishna pleasure. Just by that thought and dedication, you're outside the deadly loop of karmic activity. And you're on the spiritual platform, and therefore you, by your being on the spiritual platform, you leave the door wide open for the internal potency of the Lord to flow into your life. Devotional service is the internal potency of the Lord. We want to leave ourselves open for that. All right. We'll stop here and ask any questions. Yes?
Shakespeare also said that...
Who said?
Shakespeare.
You have studied Shakespeare?
The famous...
The British made you do that?
So what he said is that this stage, this world is a stage, and we are all actors. But he didn't know that we have to surrender to Krishna. That is the important thing. He knew the philosophy, but he didn't know that unless you surrender to Krishna, you can never get out of this material.
Yes, so?
So, your comments, if you can make some comments about this.
About Shakespeare? You're coming from the old style of education in India where the British made you study Shakespeare. Now, you know, enlightenment has come to India. They simply study whatever is necessary to get into IIT. Take the test again and again. That's all they care about. Shakespeare? Are there, on the exam for IIT, are there questions about Shakespeare? Where is Bhakti Sar? Is he here? He took the test many times. I'm sure there was no question about Shakespeare. What? Okay, you say the whole world is a stage, everyone's playing the part. But what exactly is the part? That's the reality, but the false part we are playing is thinking, I am this body and mind, and I should act karmically for my well-being. This is the disease that we're wrestling with. Practicing devotees can feel this sometimes. This fever rising up in the heart. Act for you. Get for you. What is Krishna doing for you? It's time to think about yourself more. And act for your pleasure. And Maya really gets into your face. Look around you, all these devotees working so hard just for Krishna. What about you? Think about you and your mind and senses. And if you allow this uncontrolled mind to get the better of you, you'll be performing karmic activity again. Performing karmic activity means you have hope that the material energy will make you happy, which is impossible because you're a spirit soul, part of Krishna, the Supreme Soul. Anything else? Yes? I never heard that one. There's so many Prabhupada says, so much so that I do remember Prabhupada saying, whenever you hear someone say, Prabhupada said, just think Prabhupada didn't say. Srila Prabhupada often repeated what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, his Guru Maharaj, that every one of his disciples possesses the ability to go back to Godhead in one lifetime. The ability is there, whether we take it or not, that's up to us. The devotee who wants to go back to Godhead in one lifetime is very expert at getting the mercy of the Vaishnavas, the Guru, taking guidance, because material life, or the life of the spirit soul in the material world, can be a bit tricky sometimes. Material life gets complicated. So someone who is serious about spiritual life is very serious about accepting guidance. We've explained that before. Anything else? Yes?
As between mind, senses, and intelligence, what is superior?
What is what?
Which one of these three is superior?
Is?
Superior.
Well, you have read Bhagavad Gita, yes? What does Krishna say? Superior to the sense objects are the senses. Superior to the senses are the mind. Superior to the mind is the intelligence, the next door neighbor to the soul. So superior to all the material complexities, sense objects, senses, mind, intelligence, is the spirit soul. And the spirit soul simply engages in devotional service. We have manufactured a false reality for ourselves because of our desire. We think there's an alternative. Well, there's devotional service, and then there's material activities. The material activities are a dream. We've dreamt up an option. Little children, you have a child? Little children, they're expert at dreaming up fantasies and getting caught up in them. Well, that's what the adults do. You see little children playing, I'm a fireman, I'm a policeman, I am a cricket player. And they play like that, fantasy. Well, the adults are also in a fantasy world. How can you see the fantasy clearly? With purified intelligence. That purified intelligence is the gift of engaging in devotional service. Otherwise, you'll just go on and on being bewildered with all these false hopes. Yes, I want this. I want that. What's wrong with wanting this? What's wrong with wanting that? Sometimes you can even start to resent the association of devotees. They don't understand. All I want is just this. What's wrong? You can feel that conflict in your heart sometimes. It's fantasy. And that fantasy comes from contamination. It's as ridiculous a fantasy as what little children fantasize about. I don't know. Maybe some of you know the song that little children used to sing. All I want for Christmas are my two front teeth. Anyone know that song? Yeah, you know, because little kids often, you know, they have a gap in the, you know, the teeth haven't grown in yet. They lose their baby teeth, is that it? And then the real teeth come in later. So for a while, the little kid's missing two front teeth, and, you know, it looks funny. Did it happen to any of you? So that is a song. All I want for Christmas are my two front teeth. So the adults are the same way. Once again, all I want is for things to be nice. I just want to enjoy. What's wrong? And then you may start to blame the bhakti process. Is Krishna consciousness completely against enjoyment? Not at all. We just recognize who is the supreme enjoyer. I was just watching the devotees dancing in kirtan this morning. They were so happy at 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning, jumping and dancing jubilantly. Because they're not engaged in any karmic activity, and positively speaking, they're engaged in giving Krishna pleasure. We want to become more and more committed to the process of giving Krishna pleasure, and then automatically we're out of the loop of karmic activity. Anything else? Yes.
When we're speaking about karma, the past karma, we got this body. How does our intelligence help us in this lifetime to turn towards more towards Krishna? Like, so with all that karma with us, how does our intelligence help us to turn and surrender more to Krishna in this lifetime?
It's purified intelligence that helps us to approach Krishna. So it's very important to have the intelligence cleansed so that it can actually help you discharge your mission in this human form of life. Intelligence that can help you is called buddhi. Buddhi yoga means intelligence that helps you to execute bhakti. That buddhi, that intelligence, that beneficial intelligence is the product of hearing about Krishna, hearing Bhagavatam, hearing the holy name, associating with devotees, performing devotional service. Yes?
This reminds me of Indra Prabhu. He was devoting completely all his energy, chanting holy name, spreading.
According to our ashram situation, we should also try to dedicate our energies for Krishna's pleasure, whether we're living in the temple or living in the home, living in Vrindavan, living in Melbourne, or as I do, living on an airplane. Yes.
How do we know that there is balance in our life when it comes to self-preservation in Krishna consciousness and preaching and being involved in preaching activities?
If, for example, the husband wants to help spread Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, then it's very helpful to have a wife who also has that goal. Then the home life becomes very peaceful and dynamic for doing things for Krishna's pleasure. So much depends on the goals of the husband and wife, which should be sorted out before they're married. They should discuss before marriage what is their vision of how they want to apply Krishna consciousness. Some couples will say, oh, I just want to, we want to work hard and make a lot of money and go to the temple on Sundays. Others will say, no, we want to minimize our material demands and engage in Krishna service as much as possible. We want to care for giving Krishna to others. Obviously, the more you can decrease your material activities and increase your spiritual activities, the more for real you are. But it's true, not everyone's ready for a full dose of reality. So we want to encourage everyone. Sooner or later, everyone has to renounce because death takes it all away. So if there's a desire in either the husband or wife to spread Lord Chaitanya's mission, and if both the husband and wife can agree upon that, they become very dear to Krishna. Krishna takes a special interest in their family. I've seen that again and again. Krishna takes a special interest. All right, I'll help, don't worry. You may not have as much money as someone else, but you'll advance in Krishna consciousness. The soul is not made happy and fulfilled by material affairs. It takes some time for everyone to learn that. Human beings can live very simply. It just takes some practice. Remember when foreigners go to India, what's one of the first things they say? How do they cram so many people on the bus or into a taxi? Right? Yeah, we say like that. But then what happens when persons come from India to the West? They soon pick up the art of just a few people on the bus, right? Just no more than four people in a car. We are advanced now. But the fact is, you can very easily learn simplicity. And you can also very easily forget it. My point is that you should recognize what means you have and live comfortably in Krishna consciousness within those means. Not be envious of others. Some devotees have what they say is better money karma than other devotees. So just be satisfied with your quota that Krishna has allotted you and put your focus on becoming Krishna conscious. Don't be envious of the other. Oh, that family has so much money. If I would work harder, I would also have what they have. Recognize what Krishna has naturally allotted for you and accept that. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.